10 days after he fired James Comey as FBI director, President Donald Trump leaving for an overseas trip without naming his replacement, despite a storm of reports identifying former Senator Joe Lieberman as the frontrunner for the job.
This is not a battle between different faiths, different sects, or different civilizations. This is a battle between good and evil. But the path to peace begins right here, on this ancient soil, in this sacred land. America is prepared to stand with you, but the nations of the Middle East cannot wait for American power to crush this enemy for them. The nations of the Middle East will have to decide what kind of future they want for themselves.
Another day of chaos in Athens. Riots outside Greece's parliament on Thursday night, as just inside the safety of those walls, lawmakers prepared to pass new austerity measures they hope will convince the country's creditors to release more of its economic bailout fund.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's May 22nd, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you here with us for another business day, the start of another business week. Lots going on this morning. We'll get right to the news in a minute. Later in the program, we will talk a little bit about Chicago's second season, construction season, which is underway now. We'll get an update on how things are going with A.J. LaTrace at Curb Chicago. We'll bring in our CEO for our CEO Spotlight in a minute. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Asian stocks are higher, cheered on by the latest rally on Wall Street, and relative quiet in U.S. politics. President Trump is on his first overseas visit as president. He has arrived in Israel this morning, where he has just addressed some of the leaders of Israel at the airport before continuing on with his work there. Among the global developments adding to investor fears are the various controversies swirling around the Trump administration. News was relatively quiet over the weekend as Trump visited Saudi Arabia, getting a reprieve from some of the controversies here at home. The markets look like they're going to open up weak to tepid this morning. Dow futures are off just a little bit. NASDAQ futures are a little bit higher. S&P futures are a little bit lower. Around the globe this morning, markets again in Asia generally higher, with the Nikkei up 0.5%. The Asian Dow is up more than 1%. The Hang Seng is up almost 1% as well. In Europe this morning, markets are generally lower, with the FTSE and the DAX off just about 1/3 this morning. Back in this country, crude oil trading at $50.72 a barrel. Futures there up just about 1%. Gold and silver are a little bit higher as well. Some big news this morning. Ford Motor Company is replacing its CEO, Mark Fields, amid questions about its current performance and future strategy. Source says CEO Mark Fields is retiring at the age of 56 after 28 years at the company. However, there are reports this morning, including on CNBC, that the board got rid of him, that this is not necessarily a retirement. CNBC reporting this is a board ouster of Fields. He'll be replaced by, and this is big, Jim Hackett, who joined Ford's board in 2013. Hackett is leading Ford's autonomous vehicle unit. He will now become the CEO of Ford, according to the reports we're seeing this morning. Trade ministers from the Asia-Pacific region are meeting in Hanoi today to speed up negotiations seeking to finalize a regional trade pact amid fears of growing trade protectionism. Japan reports its exports rose a solid 7.5% in April from a year earlier, though the trade surplus there dropped as higher oil prices pushed the value of imports a little bit higher. Turning soldiers into entrepreneurs through education, mentoring, and connections to the business world, those are the marching orders for Bunker Labs of Chicago. It's a nonprofit that helps military veterans become entrepreneurs with offices in 15 cities. As one leader put it, Bunker Labs helps military veterans start and grow business, comparing the organization to venture capitalists without money. Todd Conner is the CEO of Bunker Labs. He's in our CEO Spotlight this morning. Todd, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be with you.
It's good meeting you, first of all, and congratulations. You've had a really wonderful last year, couple of years, really. Tell us about Bunker Labs.
Yeah, Bunker Labs. So Bunker Labs is a not-for-profit organization that helps military veterans start and grow their own business. And we started the organization about 3.5 years ago. We're coming into our fourth year. We've opened chapters in 14 other cities. We're headquartered here in Chicago at the Merchandise Mart inside of 1871. And it's really just been an extraordinary few years, really driven by the fact that military veterans want to start businesses. And they've been calling us and they're saying, hey, we need this thing in Columbus, Ohio. We want this in Seattle. We need to create something here in Jacksonville, Florida. So we've been responding to that inbound demand and supporting the right local leaders with the right toolkit to stand up and operationalize a local chapter to support the military veterans in that community.
I said congratulations for last year because you embarked on a countrywide listening tour and spreading the message of Bunker Labs. How did that go? What did you, first of all, what did you do and how did it go?
Yeah, so what we did was we were adding these chapters in local cities, and we have a big event here in Chicago that actually just took place last week called the Muster, and it's where we convene. The muster is the term for gathering in the military, so it's a military term that we've leveraged, and we use these musters, these gatherings, to bring together a few hundred people in the community, whether it's veterans who are starting their own business or their spouses that are starting businesses, whether it's investors. And what it really does is it creates and convenes the community that's there in the city. And so we've been doing these events in cities all across the United States where we have chapters. And we put together all 15 of those muster events and created a national tour called the Muster Across America Tour, which is a very ambitious title. But it's really about catalyzing and creating a vehicle to allow military veterans to stand up in their communities, get connected with the right resources, tell their stories, sell their products. And it's a catalytic event to support the military veteran community. You know, right now, we're expecting 200,000 service members to leave active duty this year if we continue with the troop drawdown schedules that have been published by the DoD. And 25% of those folks want to start their own business. But only 3.5% of post-9/11 veterans are actually going to do that. So the young people getting out of the military now who are 27, 28, 200,000 of them come back to places like Chicago. 25% of those folks want to start a business. And they're young. They're interested in technology. They're native to it. And so we've got to give them places to show up and have that conversation. And that's really what Bunker Labs is there to be for them.
And this is different from maybe generations past because of the technology aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
Veterans came home maybe 10 or 15 years ago. It wasn't that big. It wasn't that big of a deal. Now it is.
It is a big deal. And, you know, we talk a lot about the legacy organizations like the VFW and the American Legion that really were there and served, you know, the World War II populations and the Vietnam era populations. And I think this generation of veterans, they need the same thing, which is a place to show up, connect in with the community, and talk about your aspirations. You know, I think there's a lot of discussion about what veterans need, but we approach this from a very different standpoint from the question of what are your aspirations? What are your hopes and dreams? What are you trying to do with your life? And that's a conversation that veterans are really eager to have. And so even though, you know, the generations have changed, the fact remains that veterans want to be in community. They need places to show up to do that. And we just have to deliver a solution to them that is generationally relevant, young, you know, infused by technology, the stuff that we do at Bunker Labs.
How is that 25% that want to start their own business, how is that different from past generations? Is that a high number or a low number?
Well, it's a great question. So after, and I didn't know this when we started the organization, but after World War II, 49% of veterans came back home and started or operated a business within 6 years. So that's an astounding statistic, an incredible legacy. You know, Tom Brokaw talked about the greatest generation. I think a lot of that was, of course, what they did on active duty in World War II, but a lot of that is also what they did when they came home, and they built communities, and they built businesses, and they started civic institutions, and they ran for office, and they did the things that really built the post-war economy. And many of the Fortune 100 brands that are iconic that we live with today, they have their roots in World War II veterans that came back and started businesses. And so, you know, we look at that legacy and say 50% of that generation came back and started businesses. We're never going to hit those numbers because we don't have the same numbers of people that are joining the military. But by all means, we know that the capacity of veterans to start businesses is there. They have the potential. They have the desire. And we just have to give them the right place to figure out how to put those things together.
From the 25% to the 3%, that's a big a gap. What are the challenges to having that success?
So I think the biggest challenge, and we take this head on, I think the biggest challenge for young people is networks. So if you're going to start a business, and I've done this, if you're going to start a business, you need to really know, you know, a lot of people. You need to know people that can refer you to customers, somebody that can help you build a website, somebody that can help you with your branding, somebody that can help you get, you know, debt financing or a venture capitalist that might invest or an angel investor. You need employees. You need technologists. You need all these things. And it's really about people and human networks. And the Kauffman Foundation, which studies entrepreneurship, says strong connected networks and ecosystems are the biggest correlative factor of being able to create early stage company success. And so that's true. And then the question is for veterans, why is that so hard? Well, it's hard because only 1% of young people join the military. So when they get out of the military, they have great networks of people that are in the military, but they don't know the 99%, you know, downtown Chicago who are not military veterans, but are the people who are going to make their business, whether it's customers, whether it's employees, whether it's investors. And so that's really the issue that we're taking on with the Bunker Labs, is building this network of veterans and non-veterans to make sure that the entrepreneurs themselves have the right connections and resources to get what they need when they need it to be successful.
Now, you have four parts to the overall model at Bunker Labs. Mentorship and community is one of them. Mm-hmm. What are the others? How does it work?
Yeah, so we've got kind of a four-stage model, as you said, and we do a lot online. We have an online platform called bunkerinabox.org. It's a gamified entrepreneurship challenge. So military veterans from around the world, those that are on active duty or those that have gotten off of active duty or those that are, you know, even the disabled population or people that are homebound, they can go on 24 hours a day for free and access this online learning platform that has entrepreneurship missions that are presented. And it's really different from traditional learning because a mission, for example, might be go out and talk to 5 customers and come back with their feedback. You know, we're not going to grade you on that, but this is about starting your own business. So if you want to be successful, this is what you got to do. So we've got this great online platform. We host monthly meetups in all of our cities called Bunker Brews, and these are great events attended by veterans, people that are still in the military, people that want to talk innovation, and really just network with the community. We call it Bunker Brews because sometimes it's, you know, it's a coffee meetup. Sometimes it's, you know, with a couple beers, which most veterans aren't afraid of. And then our third stage is a 12-week accelerator program, in-person classes that we run at night in our 15 cities. And then the fourth thing that we do is a CEO circle. That's kind of a mastermind group for veterans that are running companies, making money. Maybe they have 5 employees, maybe $500,000 in revenue. They're trying to grow and scale that. And so we kept hearing from those folks, hey, what's in it for me? I want to do something with the Bunker. What can I do to engage? Even though I'm not a startup, I still need support. And so we built that experience for those folks.
You're getting a lot of attention, too, from big companies and corporations. Starbucks is one of them. Tell us how that is important to your mission.
Yeah, the corporate partnership for us has been absolutely enormous. I mean, it started here in Chicago with Wintrust, who came in as our first sponsor. And then we've worked with other folks like Comcast and Deloitte and JPMorgan Chase and Bank of America and a number of iconic brands, Edelman Public Relations. As you said, Starbucks, we were with Howard Schultz a week and a half ago in Seattle, cutting a ribbon on our newest chapter there in Seattle, which was really exciting. And, you know, I'm so inspired and humbled, frankly, by the corporate support of what we're doing. They have a real belief that we have to help people start businesses. They also have a real belief that veterans make great entrepreneurs. And they believe in our model and what we're doing. And mostly because it's what veterans seem to be attracted to, right? Mm-hmm. So I always say, don't ask me how it's going. Go talk to the veteran entrepreneurs that we're supporting. I mean, they'll tell you if it's working. And so the corporate support has been huge for us. And that's really been most of our budget is coming from the corporate sponsorship, and we're continuing to diversify that as we go forward. But there's just been a lot of nice synergy with the corporate partnerships and how we engage their employees and how they support our entrepreneurs.
There's this other statistics too that show veterans are also good employers in that they will eventually employ other veterans.
Yeah.
How important is that to continuing this model down the road?
Well, it's really important. And, you know, I think success for us is that the veteran network sort of takes care of itself. And it's a unique network because you've got veterans that are, you know, at the top of their game as CEOs of the Fortune, you know, 100. And you've got veterans that are very successful investors and very successful entrepreneurs, and you've got veterans that are really struggling. And so we are one community that has all these different elements in it. And so I think, you know, our ability to convene that community and help that community support itself is a real big opportunity for us. And I think success is going to be, you know, in 10 years, not that the bunker was helpful, but that every other entrepreneur who's not a veteran says, man, I wish I had served, because being a part of the bunker helps you get things that you would never otherwise be able to get if you hadn't worn the uniform and served this country. And I think if we can build that privilege network with investors and with for the entrepreneurs, I think we're going to be very, very successful.
We see the unemployment rate currently is, what, 4.6%, something like that. Job markets are tight all over the country. You touched on it just then, the veterans still struggling in that. Where do the veterans fall into the current employment picture? Are they struggling to find jobs?
It's a good question. I don't have the current BLS sort of data, although I can tell you that anecdotally last year we did look at it. Female veteran employment is actually better than the national average, both in terms of the unemployment rate as well as in terms of the wage gap. They're actually outperforming their civilian counterparts. It's not the same with men. It's a little bit of a different picture. The unemployment rate for veterans is I think on par, if not better than the national average. The challenge for military veterans is really about, are they getting the right roles? So just because you're employed, are you realizing your full potential? And we call that under selection. People that were, in Fallujah commanding, leading six other folks in a squad, doing incredibly arduous things, coming back home, we shouldn't be slotting them in an entry-level position with somebody, with a cohort that's 5 years younger than them. I mean, we really need to find experiences and job opportunities for them that are commensurate with their experience. And some of them come to entrepreneurship because they want to move fast and they feel like, hey, I'm in this, I have a job, but I want to do more. And that's why entrepreneurship is appealing. So I think the unemployment rates are tell a pretty good story about the condition of the veterans, but I think the real story and there's not as much data on this is around underselection and how do we make sure that that having served, this is a million-dollar question, does not hurt your career after service. And George Washington talked about this. He said, the ability for us to recruit the next generation of military service members is directly correlative of how we treat our veterans. And so making sure that they're not just employed, but actually at the top of the funnel is something that we think is really important.
It sounds like the private sector is stepping up to do that. How's government doing with that?
I think government's trying their best, and I think the private sector, like you said, is doing an amazing job. We get so much support because I think people are sort of in agreement that this is something that we ought to do for the military veteran community, and not just because it's what they deserve, but frankly, it's because it's what our economy needs. It's what our country needs. We need the leadership that these veterans bring. And I think the government's trying to do their part as well. We have a lot of coordination with the VA and with the SBA. And the Department of Labor; these are the agencies that support veterans. We don't get a lot of government funding. I mean, that's actually I think it allows us to move fast. It allows us to sort of be innovative and be disruptive a little bit in terms of how we do things. We do have some small grants from the SBA, but they really want to be part of the solution. And honestly, we get a lot of elected officials coming to us and saying, "What do you need?" Because they want to get it right, and they know that, government, unless we design the solution with the veterans in the room, we're probably not going to get it right. So I think government's doing their part, and certainly in Chicago, our elected officials, the mayor, the governor, our U.S. senators are really committed and supportive of the work that we're doing and of the veteran community in general.
For veterans and others alike, making that first step to get information and move forward is often kind of hard. People are scared. What would your advice be? Veterans are listening right now thinking about, hey, Bunker Lab sounds like a really cool place to start. What should they do?
Yeah, you got to show up. And I think that's the biggest thing for entrepreneurs is like you just got to show up. I think military veterans, they're so good at so many things. One of their blind spots is, and this is what you need to do in entrepreneurship, is not have all the answers, but still show up and still start doing it. I think in the military, we're trained to really get it right and build the plan and then go out and execute the plan and stick to the plan. Entrepreneurship is very much about iterating as you go, trying, failing, moving forward. So for veterans, I'd say, get out and show up somewhere. And if you're not able to get out of your house, then get online and engage. Find an online community. But we host monthly meetups in person because I think it's important to get face-to-face with people, have a coffee, talk about, hey, Steve, where are you from? Where's your family from? What's going on? What are you feeling? What are you worried about? And then let's talk about your career. So I think if every military veteran is having personal connections with people in their community, their chances of success are extraordinarily increased. So I would just say get out there. Come join Bunker labs. Come to a Bunker Brews. Come to our meetup. We want you as part of our community. That's what we're here for. We're here to serve veterans, and we welcome them at all the events that we have. And it's all free, I should say, too, you know, for the veteran community. Everything that we do is free. We're here to be a service.
And then how can the rest of us help who are not in the military or veterans?
You know, I think for the rest of the community, it's show up as well. Yeah. I mean, we our community doesn't succeed if it's all veterans. Our community only succeeds because, like I talked about, that 1%, that 99%. We've got to have folks that are experts in the community, willing to be mentors, willing to be sponsors, willing to be investors, willing to be employees. So if you want to get involved with a startup, we can help make that happen. And so I invite them too to show up. In our, if you go to our website, bunkerlabs.org, you can find our event listings. We have a membership community app that you can download. It's free, available. It tells you events that are going on around the country. But show up and get engaged. And I always tell people that want to fix sort of the veteran unemployment problem. I said, like, don't worry about the veteran unemployment problem. Go help one veteran get a job. Start there. And if we all just did that, if we all just focused on our community, a veteran in our community, a veteran that's returning home, and really made the little extra effort to make sure that they had, you know, the right conversations to get networked, you know, we would solve any of the challenges that our veteran community is facing. And it doesn't have to be big policy. It doesn't have to be the federal government. It just has to be us as individuals taking on that responsibility and solving it for one person in our lives.
So if you were in 2018, you look back on 2017, what would you like to say you accomplished this year?
Well, we'll probably put about, you know, 50,000 miles on the travel card. You know, I think success this year is we just ran the numbers for what the impact has been in the past year. And we helped 363 companies. We helped them generate north of $51 million in revenue. We helped them raise about $28 million in a combination of debt financing and equity financing. They hired about 1,200 people, 173 of which were veteran. So those numbers are so strong. I'd like to see us double those numbers. I'd like to serve 500 companies. I'd like to say that we helped start another 200 companies. I'd like to say that we generated over $100 million in revenue for the U.S. economy. I'd like to say that we hired 3,000 employees, and that 300 of them were veterans, and that the entrepreneurs that have been with us from the start, that a couple of them, and we know who they are, that a couple of them were very, very successful, and that those individuals turned around and gave money to causes that they knew were going to impact the veteran community, that those veterans joined boards, that those veterans ran for office, that those veterans hired even more veterans. And so as we see those that are highly successful, we expect them to give it back in bigger ways. And we want to see a lot more people starting their own business here in Chicago and in cities across the United States.
Well, good luck to you, Todd. It's nice meeting you, and all the best to Bunker Labs.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for all the support from everybody who's listening. We look forward to meeting you in person at Bunker Labs at 1871.
Todd Connor is the CEO of Bunker Labs. You can follow on Twitter at The Bunker Labs. Find them online at bunkerlabs.org. We're going to continue our conversation with Todd Connor after the bell. We'll post it with the podcast of this morning's The Opening Bell at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you here for our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. It is Chicago's second season. Construction season is underway. Lots of cranes in the sky around Chicago. Lots of things happening. We thought we'd bring in AJ LaTrace of Curb Chicago this morning to give us an update on what's happening and what's not. And AJ, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
So what is the biggest thing right now that's happening? Is it this Vista Tower, or is it something else?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, there, you know, anyone who's walking around downtown right now, they'll see construction cranes pretty much everywhere downtown. But the tallest tower under construction is the Vista Tower, and that's in the Lakeshore East community. And once this building is completed in a couple of years, it'll be the third tallest building in Chicago at 95 stories.
The latest on this is it got its final construction permit. Is that the last permit it's going to need? And that means it's upwards and onwards?
Yeah, this permit will basically allow the construction crews to continue building this and go without out any breaks. But if people have walked around, they've noticed that this tower is going up pretty quickly, and it appears that the sales have been strong on it. So this is not going to be one of those Chicago Spire type of situations. This one is definitely on its way.
I saw a note, and you would know about this too, that this construction boom is sort of starting to saturate where apartments are concerned. Is that happening, and what does that mean for people who are paying rent?
Yeah, so there are about 6,000 apartments that are expected to be delivered just this year alone, and this is kind of throughout the greater Chicago area. This trend has been going on now for the last few years, and as you would suggest, the hope for renters is that with the supply being met, that rent prices will go down. And so we're kind of seeing in older buildings, especially downtown towers, some developers are updating these buildings, adding new amenities. Some are offering concessions like a month or two of rent for free to folks who sign a lease. So yeah, the downtown market is certainly getting very competitive. In the neighborhoods, it's a little bit different though. And in many popular areas throughout the city, Wicker Park, Logan Square, and so forth, rents don't seem to be, there doesn't seem to be any relief in sight in those areas.
What's happening over in the West Loop, AJ? This is where the McDonald's headquarters is going to go in. Every report we hear from over there is that this is the hot, growing hot place in the city.
Yeah, the West Loop is a pretty interesting case study right now. So, as folks who've lived in Chicago for a long time will know, it's an older industrial corridor, kind of meatpacking and food distribution area. But just in the last few years, there's been an explosion of development and all kinds of stuff, new apartments, new hotels, new retail. And this sort of climate has created an attraction for large corporations. And so McDonald's, they recently announced their move to the West Loop, to the Fulton Market area, and that their new headquarters, which is taking over the former Harpo Studios site where Oprah did her show, that's well on its way, and that's coming. And several other major projects are in the works over there as well.
Yeah, this is also where Google has its offices over there too. What is the biggest challenge over there, would you say?
So it's kind of interesting with when McDonald's came in, it seemed like there was an arrangement with the developer that, they wanted hotels and they wanted, some other sort of things there. And it just seems right now that there's been so much development that there's been a lot of, some concern from residents and, even the alderman there, Alderman Burnett, Walter Burnett Jr., just sort of about how much has really been going on. And it seems like there's a desire to sort of at least maintain some of the existing character, or at least kind of slow things down to a pace that's a little more manageable for the residents there.
One of the other things that I saw, I know you have this on your Twitter page too, is the everybody's looking at the James R. Thompson Center and what's going to happen with that. People want to get rid of it. Others want to keep it. Who's going to win this argument, and why do you think it's important to have?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, it's hard to say, but ultimately it's going to be down to our big three, Bruce Rauner, Mayor Emanuel, and Mike Madigan to really, figure out what's going on and make a game plan. But it's a very complicated situation, and it's more complicated by the fact that the Clark and Lake station, the CTA station, is attached to it, and it's one of the busiest stations in the entire Chicago public transit system. And if the state sells the property and you know, takes a huge cut, you know, there's some uncertainty still of who's going to pay for the new station. But, you know, as you mentioned, too, preservationists and, you know, architecture buffs and historians really appreciate the building for what it is. And it was designed by Helmut Jahn, who's a famous architect based in Chicago here. So, you know, despite its kind of, I guess, aging and perhaps deteriorating condition, you know, folks who are really into architecture will certainly acknowledge its importance in Chicago's architectural legacy.
Yeah. And do you think that will have any impact on whether or not it might, does it, I guess the better question is, does it have any chance of making it to a protected landmark status?
You know, probably not, unfortunately. You know, the architect himself drafted a plan to preserve the existing building, but also make it, I guess more profitable by adding a tower to the site. And it seems like a plan that, you know, could potentially work. But this is not the first time that, you know, a Helmut Jahn building has been the target of a potential demolition. You know, just a couple years ago, when the city was courting the Lucas Museum plan, once the Soldier Field parking lot site was nixed, the mayor had initially proposed moving the museum to the Lakeside Center, which is also designed by Helmut Jahn, and he came forward with a plan to ask Mr. Lucas to preserve the existing structure and perhaps use it for the museum. So, you know, I think it sends a kind of a signal to folks that, you know, maybe Chicago still has a ways to go in terms of respecting some of its architecture from important architects here, hometown architects.
Yeah, definitely. AJ, thanks for being with us this morning on the Opening Bell. Good chatting with you.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, AJ Latrace of Curbed Chicago. You can read his stuff at Curbed Chicago, chicago.curbed.com.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are flat this morning with the Dow futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up just a little, S&P futures are negative. Gold and silver are both trading higher. The latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Again this week, the focus in the grain market will be on the weather, because now we're going into the fourth week of May, and there's still acres to be planted and more acres to be replanted. That definitely will have an impact on the grain market this week. On Friday at the close last week, corn futures rose nearly 2%, reached a one-week high. That came about because of worries about cool temperatures and excessive rains in the Midwest. Soybeans did get a little stronger in the Friday trade following a 3% sell-off as Brazil's currency stabilized. And corn in some areas of the Midwest, as we said, will need reseeding. When we take a look at the livestock market, we find cattle ended the week Friday with the August live cattle contract up $1.72 a hundredweight, and the August feeder cattle contract up $1.92. June lean hogs ended the week up 35 cents. Remember the old Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement? Well, it's back in the news. Japan and other members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreed yesterday to pursue their trade deal without the United States. Turmoil over global trade negotiations pretty well revealed at a meeting of the Asia-Pacific Economic Corporation Forum, which failed to agree on its usual joint statement after U.S. opposition to wording on fighting protectionism. This one could be an interesting fight. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, May 22nd, 2017. Nothing in the way of major economic reports today, but we'll see earnings come from a consulting firm, Booz Allen Hamilton. Also, Twitter's annual shareholders meeting is today. Alphabet CFO Ruth Porat will speak to the Economic Club of New York. The Office of Management and Budget at the White House, Mick Mulvaney, will brief the media today on the FY 2018 budget. And the U.S. Supreme Court will issue orders and opinions. We will expect to see a couple of those coming before midday that could impact some of the markets today. Also, later this week, the Commerce Department has new home sales tomorrow. The National Association of Realtors has existing home sales on Wednesday. On Friday, the Commerce Department will report first quarter gross domestic product. Some of the things on our calendar for this week. On today, Monday, May 22nd, 2017.